Quick question. When was the last time that you actually looked at your website and thought, this is really working for me? If the answer is you're not sure, don't worry because you're not alone. Most therapists have a website, but they don't actually know what's helping it to convert, what might be confusing potential clients, and what might actually be turning people away. That's exactly why a website audit is so helpful because it can give you a clear outside perspective on what's actually happening when someone lands on your website. So I'm hosting a live website audit workshop April 17th, where I will walk you through what to look for, look at your website live, talk about what to fix, and how to make your website actually work for you. To learn more and sign up, head to the show notes to register. Now, onto the episode. You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Comegys, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. It's hard to believe that we are only a week away from the end of 2024. The end of the year is a time we often reflect on what we want to leave in the old year and welcome or usher in with the new. Many therapists look at the end of the year to think about how or what they want to do differently in their practice in this new year. And oftentimes there may be a sense that I want to not work as much, or I want to work differently because I'm just tired. But maybe it isn't just tiredness or exhaustion. Maybe you're feeling burnout and you're saying, I can't keep going like this. Then this episode is for you. Today, we are going to be exploring how to combat burnout and work to minimize it in our lives, in our work. My guest today is Kaylee Wolkin. She is an LPC, LMHC, and certified career counselor who believes that every one of us has an incredible story to tell. And so in her work with therapists and burnout helpers, she loves to reawaken the stories that make us unique so that everyone can step into the things they feel most excited to do. As a therapist with over 14 years experience and a certified career coach, she uses her training and experience through career coaching that doesn't simply help you find a job, but instead helps you to find the career path that will fulfill and excite you each day. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I always love being able to talk to other professionals in the field.
Yeah, it's great to connect with others, and I'm big into collaboration and just being able to connect with others who understand where you're at. That's partly what this show is about. And, you know, we were chatting before, just the unique challenges of having kids and running a practice and having to adjust with their schedules and you know, what that looks like as a mom and as a therapist. So yeah, I know lots of listeners can relate. But for listeners of this show, they know that I always ask first-time guests to share your story, how you got into this field, what led you to say, I think I want to be a therapist. I think I want to be in private practice.
Well, I love this question, partly because of the career work I do, because I essentially ask people the same thing. But I always start with the when I grow up story, because it just it warms my heart. Because when I was a kid, what I wanted to be when I grew up was a zookeeper, which is nothing with being a therapist. But I learned that they work on Christmas, and that was just not going to do. So I thought, oh, well, maybe I could be a veterinarian. I still work with animals and all this stuff. Until my heart started to really lean into helping people who were grieving their lost pets. And that was kind of the clue to me that I wasn't. Like, I loved animals. I even like volunteered at a vet for 2 years, but it was helping the people. And so when I went to college, I started psychology. I got done with psychology, and I kind of stayed on that projected path from then on. Private practice happened for me simply because I moved. I worked in another private practice for 11 years, and then we moved back home to Michigan, where my family is. And that was just kind of the moment when I said, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this. And And kind of the rest is history in the sense that now I work on my own and I love it.
Yeah. It's interesting. We're going to get more into kind of the career coaching piece of this, but did you have any, I don't know if objections there is the right word, or any kind of struggles with like figuring out like that part of private practice for you? Like, was that
Yeah.
something that you had to explore yourself?
So, yes and no. I definitely hit some of those, if I could go back and do it differently, I would, moments where I originally, in the process of moving, was just going to take on a handful of people who wanted to stay with me when I moved and just wanted to continue via remote, like telehealth. And so I thought, oh, I can open a, sign up with a EHR and get the LLC and all that fun stuff. But I ended up hiring out a company to do all of the LLC filings. And then I found out it was so much cheaper and easier to just do it myself. But I think for the most part, it was just like stumbling into like really buying resources as I needed them because that's all I knew what to do, joining a ton of Facebook groups and getting advice from people there. And so I figured it out, but I feel like I could have done it a little more smoothly if I had the support behind me. So,
That looking back, that would have been really beneficial for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a little clunky with how I did it. I made it work, but it was a little clunky. So,
No, that was my experience too, starting out was, pieced it together. But then again, there's things that you go back and you're like, well, now it's more work on this side because I didn't have someone kind of guiding me that, like, all right, I got to go back and fix that. And that impacts this part and that impacts that part. And so, yeah, I definitely experienced that myself. For you, the career coaching, was that something when you went into private practice, like, was that something that you were doing, you were interested in, or how did that kind of come about for you?
So that kind of always existed in my counseling work, but it became a focus once I moved. I in grad school, I was part of the career outreach team because I was working in a university counseling center. So I was doing kind of that career advising, talking with students about choosing career paths. Then in private practice, the group practice I was in, I became the resident kind of career person. I actually coordinated with colleagues then to say, hey, keep your clients, but I'll do a few sessions with them career-wise, and we're kind of coordinating as a team. I'll pass on the information to you know, all that fun stuff of coordinated care. But I had it in me then. So when I moved, it was kind of a good excuse to say, what if I just made this my niche or my focus? So, yeah.
Do you find a specific like age group tends to seek that out from you, or are you
Yeah.
surprised by what you find?
It's all ages. What I think people don't know about career work is that I think we expect it to be college students. And one, I have a little bit of a hill I'll die on that not everybody should go to college right away because it's a lot of wasted money when you don't know what you want to do. But it's not usually college students that do the career counseling. It's usually people who have done at least one career path and they kind of feel done with it. And then they're ready to move on to something new. A lot of my clients have kind of hit that about 30 years old. A lot of my clients are hitting that I need to change what I'm doing. And then there's another moment of career shift, oftentimes around 50 years old. So there are some kind of patterns to when that happens, but it's not, I typically work with the 30-year-olds. And I know people who work with the 50-year-olds kind of age range, and I usually refer to them because they're the ones who have that knowledge and background.
So, what has your experience been like in working with therapists around this? Is this something that you see specifically showing up with therapists? I mean, I have my thoughts and opinions and I'll wait on that.
You're like, I'll
But
wait.
I'm really curious to see, like, that's what you focus on. Like, what are you seeing with therapists?
Well, therapists are burnt out and they don't A lot of times it's, I don't think I can do this anymore. It's not even a, I'm ready to change careers. It's, I don't want to do this anymore because I'm so tired, which breaks my heart, which is why I have such a passion for, I do the career work, but I also, a big part of my work is sometimes maybe you don't need to leave the career itself. Maybe it's you need to pivot to a different part of the career. And so, what I see with therapists is that the burnout drives them to find something that won't burn them out. And that's kind of their top priority. And my focus often becomes, let's heal from the burnout. Let's find new ways to live. And then let's evaluate what you need in terms of a career path. I'm of the opinion therapists have some of the most transferable skills out there. So therapists can change careers pretty easily, but I don't know that that's always the answer. So.
No, I would agree. I mean, like, just what I've seen in conversations with other therapists, that, I mean, if you are listening to this and you don't think that there is burnout in our field, like, your head's in the sand somewhere, or if you haven't experienced it yet, call me, 'cause I want to know how.
Yeah, please tell us your secrets.
But, like, there is a real burnout in our profession. And I absolutely think, I think it's been there for a long time, but I think everything kind of coming out of the pandemic has heightened that. We're all tired. I mean, add in being a mom, being a woman, like, there's so many extra added layers to that. And that, yeah, there is burnout. And I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, but I feel like if you get to the core of what many of us are feeling, it's not that we want to not necessarily, like, be doing the work. Like, I want to still support clients, or I still want to work with this population, but, like you said, I'm tired. I can't keep going as I am.
Yeah, so when we look at the core definition of burnout, and this is my paraphrasing, but it's basically unchecked stress overwhelming us. And so if you think about it from almost like a survival brain, our brain is going to go, well, what's my source of stress? I need to get away from that. And so if we've decided as therapists that our stress is our job, which is a very common, I'm not going to argue that our job isn't stressful, ridiculously stressful. But if our minds are saying that is the stress I got to get away from, then we're going to want to leave. And I think a big part of it is checking in and saying, okay, but sometimes it's about reorganizing things so that you can kind of reclaim your control over how things go within your life, whether it's changing, like changing the population you work with, or, you know, changing the way you schedule your day. There's a lot of elements of stress, so it's important to kind of break it down.
Are there, like, common themes or common, I don't know, pieces where you're saying, like, okay, like, yes, you're experiencing burnout, and like, the instinct is to get away from it because it's the stress. But are there common things that you see amongst therapists who are feeling this, that, like, whether it is a schedule thing, or whether it is trying to see too many clients, or how they've structured their practice? Are there any commonalities you have found?
Yeah, absolutely. Financial stress. A lot of the stress will come from I need to find a more stable income. Paperwork is a stress that often is the reason people want to leave the one-on-one client work, because paperwork is going to be a part of that. And I think another one is just that sense of isolation. And while it doesn't feel like it's a stress in the sense of something adding to us, it is a stress in the sense that it doesn't help us feel more connected or able to feel supported in the field. So I'd say those three things.
No, and I think the isolation's an interesting thing, because I don't think that gets talked enough about when it relates to the feelings that we have around burnout with our profession. Because, especially if you're in private practice, especially if you're working from home, there is even more heightened isolation, I think, that comes. And, you know, somebody else pointed this out recently, that the work we do, you can't talk about it.
Right.
right? Like I can talk to my husband at the end of the day, like, how was your day? And he can give me details and stuff. And, you know, all I can really say is it was good. I saw a lot of clients, or I didn't have many.
Do you hate that question? Like
Yeah.
when people are like, how's your work going? You're like, well, I can't really say much. Like, do you ever feel
Yeah.
that?
Yeah. And partly it's like, I don't really want to like, 'cause it feels like placating it, right? Like to be like, it's good. Like, you know, and is it good? Yes. Am I tired from it? Yes. Like, am I holding space for people with some really heavy things? Yes. But like, I don't really want to talk to you about it, and I can't talk to you about it. And so then again, it creates further isolation. I have a core group of friends from grad school. We don't live near each other anymore, but you know, we're on a group text, and I can say something to them that they understand it, right? Or like, I'm not, you know, just closing client information, but like, sometimes therapists have like dark senses of humor because it's our way that we cope, right?
Oh, I did one of those before and I had to tell a friend because I was like, nobody else will get it. Like, yeah.
And that, like, that can make it hard to make friends, and then we're isolated, you know, because of that. So yeah, I think that that isolation is such an important part to acknowledge, just as part of the struggle that we have.
Yeah, 100%. I think therapists, I hear all the time, therapists looking for friends.
Yeah.
I think all people, my experience in the field is that everybody feels a sense of loneliness. There's like the Surgeon General report itself
Yeah.
talks about loneliness being an epidemic right now, but I think therapists, it's a very isolating
Yeah.
job. And you're right, you can't really talk about it. It's all on you too.
Yeah.
You know, if you call in sick, you got to figure out how to take care of your clients or things like that too. So, yeah.
Yeah. We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/comp connecting. As a therapist, business owner, and a mom, managing your business finances effectively is crucial. That's where Bank Novo comes in. Bank Novo isn't just a bank account, it's your partner in growth. With free checking and a range of features tailored to small businesses like yours, like no hidden fees or minimum balances, Bank Novo makes managing your finances simple and stress-free. But what truly sets Novo apart is its compatibility with the Simple Profit Method. Whether you're just starting out or looking to streamline your financial processes, Bank Novo seamlessly integrates with Simple Profit, helping you track expenses, managing invoices, and maximizing your profits effortlessly. And for listeners of this show, when you sign up for a free Bank Novo account at bit.ly/NovoAshley and enter the referral code AshleyComages, all one word, after making a $100 deposit, you'll receive $40 as a sign-up bonus. Yep, you heard that right. $40 just for taking control of your finances with Bank Novo. So fellow therapists, take the next step towards financial empowerment. Join me in choosing Bank Novo and unlock the financial tools you need to thrive in your practice. When you're working with a therapist around, you know, this career exploration, are there things that you think would be helpful, like as a place to start? Like if someone is saying, I don't know if I don't want to do this anymore, like how do you assess whether it's okay, like you said, making that pivot or leaving altogether?
So it will depend a lot of times on if they walk into a call saying, I'm done. There's no changing my mind. I'm not going to even try. But if somebody's kind of saying, I don't know, what I want to do, then we start. I always start with career tests. They're free. The ones I use are free, and I just am a fan of starting with something that is a little more objective than just me asking a bunch of questions. But I start with those because it helps to get a picture of even the interest test that I do. If their responses on the test, if the scores are all really low, or if they're all kind of in the same range, that indicates to me that they're really unsure of what they're even interested in. Whereas if there's clear definition, I can say, okay, you have interests. It's probably just finding the right way to apply these. And then my other favorite test to do is called the Spark type. I will talk about that over and over again.
I've
They
heard of it before,
probably,
but I
I
don't know
know.
much. Can you talk a little bit about what it is?
So the Spark type, they talk about it like motivators. So we hear about, I think the Enneagram talks about motivators too. But the Spark type, I've kind of paraphrased as instead of it being motivators, it's like the types of roles that we find the most fulfilling. So if we want to be in kind of a nurturing role or a problem-solving role or things like that. And what I love about it is it gives you three answers. It gives you your primary role, kind of where you thrive the most, your shadow type, which is it's like the supporting character in a story. It's helping that primary. And then you have your anti-type. So it actually tells you which roles drain you the most. And what I usually find is so valuable with that, especially with therapists, is when we get into it, is they are spending so much time in that anti-type role
Interesting.
that they're feeling drained. And it's not that they can't do it. It's that it takes the most energy from them.
Sure.
And I'll give you all of the websites to
Yeah.
the tests and what or the assessments, but it's one of my favorites because it gives those answers so clearly.
Yeah. Do you feel like when you've worked with therapists exploring this, that they're surprised when they see, like, do you feel like most people like know this, or do you feel like we're typically surprised when we ex do this exploration, what we
I
find?
think a lot of people are surprised, but in like a that makes sense kind of way, kind of the, oh my gosh, I never realized that that is what was happening. But as I look back, yeah, I hate that part of my job. And it starts to help peel away the, it helps to like separate it to say, see, it's not that you hate being a therapist, it's that you hate this part of the work. How do we make this part less burdensome to you? And so that usually can help a ton.
Can you talk a little bit about, I know one of the things with the burnout is this idea of like misalignment, and how do misalignment with like what our career is with, again, maybe it's is those spark types. Apart from like doing an assessment like that, what are some ways to explore where we are maybe misaligned, and how do we create that realignment then?
So one of the things that I usually do with everybody also is a kind of an energy evaluation of how kind of going with the spark type part, but it's different, but like talking about what part, how does your day go in terms of how much energy you're spending versus gaining? Usually if they have the knowledge of the spark type, they can use that terminology or that awareness, but we can also just do it with what do you like to do? What do you not like to do? You know, what do you get excited about? What do you try to avoid? And I talk about it in terms of a friend taught me this, but I talk about it in terms of like a stoplight, that the things that we love to do are green, the things that we hate to do are red, and the things that are kind of neutral to us are yellow. And so if you think about how a stoplight works, it's a green, if it's a green light, if you were to hit a red light suddenly without something to slow you down, there's probably going to be accidents. Like there's going to be some kind of like, I can't do this abrupt stop. And so in the rules of that planning your day, it becomes when you're doing something you love, have a neutral break, transition, and then do the thing that you don't, that you dislike. And on the flip side, when you're doing something you don't like, the next thing should be green. The next thing should be something that gets the gas on the floor kind of thing. And I find that even if that's the only thing we do, by identifying kind of what their days look like, people will say things like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize how red my day was," referring to all the activities that are red in one day. With therapists, I talk about this with clients too. We love our clients. I'm not saying anything about our individual clients, but there are times where we know the work with one client may feel like a lot more difficult, a lot more energy draining than the work with another client. And so we can run into that same feeling.
Is in your work around this exploration, is part of what you do to help them find like what that realignment in what they're currently doing is, or like what that pivot is?
Yeah, so it's funny because I do a lot of career work, but it's almost like it's career work within your career to get it more aligned, to get it more in the place that fits you as a person. I firmly believe that we as people have like those little whispers to ourselves of what really we love to do. And we're usually pretty close to it, or we've even thought about it, but we're scared for some reason. And so I do a lot of encouraging of what is it that you long to do, and how can we help you live that out now, no matter what you're doing in your job, you know?
Do you find there are common things that, like, whether it is like a fear, you said like that, like, how do we get you to where that is? I have a suspicion and I'm going to hold off on saying what it is, but like, are there things that you notice as similar things that are holding back from like, yeah, you can move to that next thing?
I think it sounds like a really easy answer, but I think that practical things like the things that keep finances or location, I don't know that this exists around me or things like that. It's funny, I notice themes. For example, a lot of therapists, their anti-spark type is either essentialist or performer, which is basically essentialist is your paperwork person, and performer is like presenting to a crowd. But I think in terms of where people get like stuck, it's usually in those practical like rules that we feel like we have to follow, because we don't believe that it's possible to do what we actually want to do.
Interesting. So it's not, so I think this idea of like around a rule, like rules, is really interesting. So it may not even be a practical thing of like I have to be able to pay my bills to do this, but it's the sense of, I mean, I hear a lot of times when I'm working with clients, I don't do career coaching, but when they're unhappy in their job is, well, I just got there, I can't possibly leave. And so maybe that's like one of those types of rules. I was curious how much if you see, and this kind of goes along with the rules, things like imposter syndrome kind of creeping up, that I see rules around that, right? Like, well, I couldn't possibly do that, you know, or I'm not allowed to do this bigger thing, you know, because the profession says, or so and so says. Do you see that as any of those rules?
Imposter syndrome, or even just lack of confidence. I think, like I said, I believe therapists have some of the most transferable skills, but what I see is a lot of, well, this is the only thing I know how to do. And I'm like, oh, but that's not true. Like, if I were to stick you in a meeting with a bunch of business people and they were trying to plan a marketing scheme, like, and they started talking about how to interact with people, you'd jump in and go, maybe we should listen first. There's things that therapists have as skills that I think there's a lack of confidence in ourselves to apply those skills outside of the therapy field.
But that they are absolutely
Oh,
transferable.
yeah. Yeah, I got like a running list of the skills that therapists do versus how they can transfer to other things. I definitely have that list for every time we do like resume work or things like that. I say, listen, this skill right here, we can translate to say that you do this thing. So,
Do you find they tend to be surprised by that? Or is it like,
yeah.
oh, well, yeah, duh.
No, it's surprise. Like, it's the really, I can do that. It's that kind of response. Again, like that's why I say the rules, because it feels like they're saying like, oh, I'm not allowed to.
Right.
So that's why I say it that way, yeah.
Well, and I think our profession, I feel like a lot of times those of us that go into it tend to be rule followers.
Oh yeah.
And then our profession, whether I'm a social worker, you're LPC, right? Every
All of
all the
the
others.
ethics, like all the
Yes,
codes, and yeah.
yes. Yes, we're so afraid to do things because I'm going to break this rule, or the ethics police are going to come and get me, right? And so I think we almost sometimes have feel like there's rules around like what we're allowed to like dream of what we want. Our education system that really encourages us to even like think outside of the box, because again, you have to like do things within your scope of practice, and you have to do things within your ethics and within your license and stuff. And that is all true. But I know like even like social work, I think the school social works do tend to show like, yeah, you could do everything from macro to micro, but like within a certain block. And I think the counseling profession and schools are very similar in that way. And then you add in like colleagues that are just like reinforcing that. So yeah, we're constantly asking permission, and trying to follow the rules.
I mean, I think that that's important to a degree, but I think we put everything under the umbrella of I gotta check and make sure. I gotta make sure that this is okay. I gotta, you
Yeah.
know.
Yeah. If someone is listening to this and there's parts of this that are resonating with them, and they're saying like, is it burnout and I need a pivot, or is it I just have to, completely change what I'm doing? Where's the first place that someone could kind of start exploring this? And it may be in reaching out to you, but what is something that people can start kind of doing to kind of explore this for themselves?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, I do on my website have a career alignment quiz that kind of checks in with how you're doing with your career and like how it fits within your like work and life. And I don't love work-life balance as a term. I
Yeah.
prefer work-life wellness. Because I think we need to know, is what I'm doing in my work fitting who I am, and is how I'm living my life fitting who I am? And so I have that quiz that people can always go. It's free. You can just go take it on my website. I also think it can be incredibly helpful to like you asked in the beginning of your podcast, how did you get into the field? Why did you want to be a therapist? I think it's good for us to ask ourselves that every once in a while and to say, like, why did I want to do this? And does that still exist for me? And if it still exists, then I think it's not about you being a therapist. I think it has more to do with the job itself that you're in that moment and getting clear about what's fitting and not fitting with that job so you can problem solve in a way to take care of yourself better.
No, I love that, because yeah, if the story of why you got into this field still feels true, then there again, it may be like, okay, how do we pivot within that field versus like leave it all together? Yeah. If listeners want to learn more about you and connect with you outside of the show, where's the best place for them to do that?
Yeah, I think the best way to learn about me is definitely on my Instagram, which is just at LP Career Coach. It's the easiest way to kind of hopefully get little snippets from me, but also you can always connect with me there. And then if you want to kind of get the more like book version of information, I would go to my website, which is mycareercoach.online. For therapists specifically, I do also have a Facebook page called The Therapist Hour. So if that is something that therapists are interested in, they can also go there, as that's a community. Actually, it's designed for therapists to be human. We have a lot of different communities out there of the therapists supporting one another or getting resources, but this one is literally like, hey, you're a person. This is
Yeah.
your place to show up and be a person and have a community of other
Yeah.
burnt out therapists who want connection with others. So
And we'll have links to all of that in the show notes for people to check out. Keely, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today and to chat with me. I feel like this is something, especially as the year is wrapping out, for people to really look at. And, you know, you may not be questioning whether you're going to leave the profession or not. You may know you want to stay, but again, that like realignment and taking some of the things that you said, I think could be really beneficial for all of us as, you know, we're restructuring how we want to start 2025. So thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Of course. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.